Welcome to another edition of ARG Presents. I'm your good buddy, your good pal, your personal friend, Amigo Aaron, joined by a man who gives a new definition to the term Punisher. I give you the Brent.
Yes, I'm going to punish all of you.
You've been punishing me since the show began. I can tell you that right now.
Well before that, I assure you.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, if you joined us last week, Brent, we had a good turnout last week. And the week before. We're rolling, brother. If you turned out the last couple of weeks, we spun the wheel. We made the deal. And this week, Brent, we'll be playing games on, bam, the Capcom CPS 1.5 Dash Play System. Brent, explain to the people what in God's name we're talking about.
This was their transition from the CPS 1, which was just a normal board, a PCB with your chips in it, just like you'd have anywhere else, they were heading to the CPS 2, which was going to be a cartridge-based board, where they slid PCBs into an existing overall architecture so they could, it's more economical for arcades and whatnot, easier to program too. Because you have your OS kind of built into everything, and then you just slide in the new stuff. And this was the stopgap in between. This was why they were doing transitions. CPS 2 wasn't quite ready yet, but CPS 1 was showing its age. So the Dash system had, what, about 5 games for it, Aaron?
It did. And, yes.
And they went from there, and they said, you know, this is a good system, but it was solely made as a holdover until CPS 2 got finished.
Correct. And we decided, since we already covered some CPS 1 stuff, that it'd be fun to cover the Dash system. Now, let's get into the Dash in a little more detail. Of course, manufactured by Capcom, released February 1st of 92, and they finished up with it December 6th of 93, so not quite 2 years of use for the Dash play system. This ran on a Motorola 68000 at 10 megahertz. Yeah. That's kind of wacky, isn't it?
It is.
This ran at 384 by 224 pixels with 3,072 colors. Weird. You could have, they had this set up to how you could have 3 to 6 buttons and an 8-way stick. So, like Brent said, this was sort of a stopgap in between the CPS 1, the CPS 2. Let me tell you something about these CPS boards, and the Dash was no exception. If you look at these boards, if you hold them in your hand, these are a sandwich of boards, like interconnected boards. Yeah. They're in a box, basically. It has a name. It's a box, big old box. And inside the box is these boards. Now, Capcom was real paranoid about their systems. And so they used the infamous suicide batteries on these things. There was volatile memory that required power, and so when that power ran out, you lost your ability for that board to work, and this dumbfounded people for a long time until they were able to crack these things, and so you could basically bring these boards back from the dead.
It's not just as easy as switching out a couple double A's. The batteries in some boards are embedded in the board.
Yeah,
not necessarily in Capcom's cases. But these suicide batteries would be in the actual PCB, and you'd have to cut it out with a knife.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
If you were an arcade owner and these things went bad on you, you literally had to send them back to Capcom to have them take it back to the factory and fix them. Yeah. And I can tell you, now me and the Brent owned some CPS 1 and some CPS 2 boards, and I can tell you right now, that was a constant fear. And when we owned them, they weren't nearly as old as they are now.
So, absolutely.
And those suckers didn't come cheap either.
Getting them repaired was an absolute pain, even for the easiest ones.
Yeah.
It required clipping wires or clipping from the board and soldering things back in.
Yeah.
They weren't wires. They were actually like hard points. But my goodness, it was an absolute disaster. And it was just, these weren't made for longevity. And I understand that, right? So these people weren't thinking, you know, 15 years down the road, someone's still going to be wanting to play, the Punisher or Saturday Night Slam Masters. And I would say if they had it over to do over again, they wouldn't have manufactured them like that. Because I can't imagine it was any cheaper than putting a different kind of battery in that you could change out easily. But holy cow, absolute nightmare for anyone wanting to maintain boards like this.
I always wondered how the arcade owners felt knowing that they had a board that could go bad on them. I mean, because these things weren't cheap. Like I said, if you had, now I'll grant you, a lot of times arcade owners would, back in the day, and this would, you're talking again, this is the early 90s. These boards would probably get shuffled in and out a lot, but still, if you're paying all this money for these boards, something you think you could always go back to, and you find out that all of a sudden you that these things are going to have a date where they're going to no longer work, that would anger me as a arcader. This is one of the boards that we unloaded quick, wasn't it? Because we were paranoid.
I don't know. I mean, if you had machines on site, there are different types of operators. There are operators that actually care about the machines, and that would probably be a concern. But the majority of operators are there to make a buck, and they know that 2 years down the line, this game's not going to be in a cabinet anyway. They're going to be swapping it out for the new hotness. And so I doubt they necessarily cared much. It's not like a jukebox or even a pinball machine, although pinball machines have sort of the same problem, but in a different way.
Yeah.
That you're going to keep forever and ever and still be making money off of it. Video games, man, arcades, if you can last a year in the arcade, you've got one of the best games ever.
Yeah.
So they knew it was an in and out type of thing.
That's why when we covered Double Dragon last week and we heard that it was the number one arcade game for 2 years in a row, that was stunning.
Incredibly,
that was a very rare occurrence.
Incredibly stunning, yeah.
So this game, Brent mentioned this, there were only five Capcom Dash Play System releases. And we've actually covered one of them already, which was Cadillacs and Dinosaurs. We covered that in the CoinOp video way back. It was the first dashboard game to come out. It came out in February of 92. It was followed by one of the games that we'll be covering today, which is Worries of Fate. Then that was followed by The Punisher. And then the last two games released were wrestling-based games, Saturday Night Slam Masters, which came out in July of 93. And then shortly thereafter, Muscle Bomber Duo Ultimate Tag Battle, which was a sort of a sequel or an extension of Saturday Night Slam Matches, it came out, and it was the last game to come out. It came out in December '93. A lot of people are going to be surprised, Brent, that I didn't cover any of the wrestling games, given the fact that I'm a big wrestling fan. I'm going to address that right now. I don't like them. I never liked those games because they were a combination of, like, remember the part in Final Fight where you fight that guy in the wrestling ring? They're sort of like that. They just basically take it's not like
more in depth than that.
But it's not a wrestling game like WrestleFest, and it's not a Final Fight style game like, say, Final Fight. It's somewhere in the middle, and that place that it dwells stinks. I never liked that place. Now Muscle Bomber Duo Ultimate Team Match was a little better. You had more characters, but I didn't like it that much either. And so since I'd covered a game on this system already, and I wasn't going to cover these two, and I knew what you were covering, that narrowed it down to one game. And so, my God, that's the one I'm covering this week. I guess I'll go ahead and heck, that's a good intro.
You
know, I mean, I had no choice.
What a segue. I got stuck with this.
And I will say, Brent, not an idiot. He picked his before I could say a word. He was already picked his. So the game I'm going to be playing this week is, bam, here we go, Warriors of Fate. Warriors of Fate, but they'll worry you. Don't think they won't worry you. Again, this was on the Capcom Dash. This got released, believe it or not, on the Sega Saturn and the PlayStation. Did you know that? This had home releases?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is a hugely popular game everywhere but here.
Yeah, this was a up-to-three-player game. Another weird oddity. This is one of those games sort of like Mercs where you can play three people at once. Also strange, or a Rampage. This was released in 92, October 31st. I like that. Worldwide. Kind of neat. In Japan, it got on PlayStation, it got released in 94 and on the Saturn in 96. So, what is Warriors of Fate? I learned a lot about Warriors of Fate this week because I knew nothing, okay? So, Warriors of Fate is a video game based on a manga. Did you know that?
Yes.
How the heck did you know that?
I watched a guy that plays this whole series.
No kidding. I can't believe that. So, the name of the manga, and I'm going to mangle these names, is Tenchu Wu Kura. Let's go with that. and so, This game was believe it or not, was not the first game that was released based on this manga. In fact, this is like the second game that was released out of three. The first game was called Dynasty Warriors.
Yep.
And then you also had a game called Destiny of an Emperor. Pretty cool. This was a beat 'em. Actually, I think this is the third of the, this is the third. So there was an arcade game that was released from Capcom, and it was called Dynasty Wars. Dynasty Wars was an older Capcom game where you fought from horseback. Okay, now believe it or not, there's a backstory to all this, and I'm going to try to dip into it. Okay.
Oh, this is going to be a disaster.
Okay, now wait, give me a break here. So, the storyline is set in the Three Kingdoms period in China, when Western Shu, Northern Wei, and Eastern Wu battled to conquer China. Okay. Liu Bei is a descendant of Liu Xing, Prince Jing of Zhongshan of the Han Dynasty. All right. Cao Cao is the adopted grandson of Cao Ting, a eunuch in the palace. Poor guy. He got hosed. Sun Jian is the governor of Shandong. I'm the king of Dong, by the way, in case you look at my shirt here. And the three show their marvelous leadership roles to divide China into three states, Shu, Wei, and Wu. Okay? I don't know what any of this means.
Woo!
Okay, yeah. And so you are intermingled in this somehow, and I have no idea what's going on with that. So let's pretend we don't know, because we don't. It's China. It's going down. And you know it's going down in a violent way. Okay? So, what do you do in this crazy game? Well, you pick a character out of a batch of like five guys here. And I'm going to kind of briefly touch on these characters, because they're pretty different, okay? The characters you can play as are Guan Ye, Zhang Fei, Zhou Hun, Hyung Zorn, all right? And Wei Yan, okay? Now, does that mean anything to you? Probably not. So we'll go a different way. All right, you got a couple guys that go barehanded. You got a sword guy. You got a bow and arrow guy. Okay, he's
old.
That's it. Okay, we're gonna go down that road. And again, if for any of the Chinese listeners or listeners that are steeped into this manga, I do apologize. I'm not trying to be a smarty. I just don't have any idea what any of this means, because this is very unusual for me. So, what do you do in this game? You run through nine stages of game. This is set up very much like Final Fight, as you start off with like a little mini movie or a little plot action that kind of sends you on your way, and your ultimate aim is to finish off the bad guy, Liu Bu. Okay, so each level you go through, you'll see a map on the screen before you start, and one area will highlight, just like Final Fight. When you clear that level, the next level will highlight, just like Final Fight, okay? And when you defeat them all, you have your boss battle. Now, also like Final Fight, you're going to hear those words a lot. You are going to be picking up weapons along the way to help you in your battle. Now, for example, some guys come with a built-in weapon, all right? They'll have a sword or a bow and arrow.
Yep.
That doesn't mean they can't have another sword or a mace or whatever crap they find lying around. There's weapons all over the place in this, and you can pick them up and you can attack the bad guys in this. I mean, this is sort of the actual graphics in this are very reminiscent of something like the Advanced Dungeons and Dragons games, right? In terms of the backgrounds, absolutely, and the vegetation, absolutely, and stuff. Is that what it reminded you of?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If this was, I would have gambled money this was the same engine. It's not, at least not that I'm aware of, but I would have gambled it was the same engine.
Yeah, it is surprisingly not the same engine. I was kind of surprised by that too, if I'm honest, because it does look a lot like the graphical, and even your characters share a lot in common with the Dungeons and Dragons guy, not just because they're wearing weapons and wearing robes and stuff. They just, you know, and the bad guys, I mean, clearly the same artist certainly worked on both games. So again, I mentioned there are nine levels in this. Each level has a name, all right? I'm not going to name all these, but the one thing about them is at the end of the level, you get to fight a boss, and each of the bosses have a different gimmick. For example, the boss at the end of the first level, his name is Gaido. He's got a spear. Then you've got a guy later on that has a hammer. You've got a guy that has a bunch of daggers. You've got a guy that throws bombs. He's the last guy. So you've got different, you know, it's pretty much standard fare in this game. There are different levels, and each one has sort of a story. But one thing I noticed about this game as I got into it, because me and the boy have played this one before, because we went through a phase where we played all these sort of beat-em-ups. This one has a problem that turns me off of it as you get into the later rounds. Every time you play these games, of course, they're made to take your money, okay?
Yeah.
And you're going to march out a limited number of soldiers in this game, okay? Just like every other game. This game seems to have a particularly limited amount of bad guys. And at certain levels, the levels get real mundane and plain, and they just send out wave after wave of huge bad guys to take your money. And unlike a game like X-Men or Cadillacs and Dinosaurs or even The Punisher, there were no bones about it in this. They just sent out a wave after wave of guys in these boring battles. And I will say, it got kind of boring about two-thirds of the way through the game. One of the aspects of this game that differentiated from some of these other games that I mentioned was the fact that you can fight from horseback. This is a pretty neat element. The horseback gives you the ability to dash with your horse. You're fighting downward, so you're hitting these ground targets. If you've got the archer's sort of permanently shooting diagonally down, which sounds like horrible, and it's not the best, I'm not going to lie. I beat the game with him the other night. But on the horse, he gets a much better vantage to shoot from.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, so he ends up being a pretty nasty player. Something else I liked is that you could, of course, you could turn the facing of your horse with button. You could also run the horse one way and attack the other way, which is nice.
Yeah.
So you can attack both ways while your horse is in one way. Sort of like a golden axe. When you're mounted, you can get dismounted a couple times, and eventually the horse will just run off, and then you got no horse. I thought the horses didn't come out enough in this because the first game you were on horse the whole time. And that's sort of a neat element. And I wish they would have had more horse action as opposed to less horse action. Some of the enemies come out on horses, but you instantly destroy them and take their horse. And so you never really fight any mounted enemies for the most part. And so that's kind of a bummer. What did you think about the whole animal, you know, the horse angle? And what did you also, I want to know what you thought about the weapons in this that you start off with your guys.
Well, I always played the sword guy.
Which this guy that we're looking at now, the green guy?
Yeah. Yes, because he's green. Mm-hmm.
I believe you. Sadly.
You're right. The game is a flood of enemies. There aren't enough unique enemies to keep interest peaked. When you get on a mount or something like that, it does make the game more interesting. I love charging people and just running them over.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun doing that. And you get a different sort of move set while you're on the horse, which makes the gameplay a little more interesting. But when you get knocked off the horse, then it's bad times because the horse makes you exceptionally powerful.
Yeah, he helps a lot because you've got that, you're higher and you've got the vantage. You've got a longer reach too.
Yeah,
especially if you've got the archer, it really helps a lot with him.
So when you lose the horse, you're getting powered down, but there's still the exact same amount of enemies coming.
Yeah.
And if you lose the horse early in a scene, holy cow, it's a long trog to the end.
It's a long trog any way it goes.
It is.
Because this game I think this game outstays its welcome. Nine levels are too much. I think they lost steam. There's a couple levels that are kind of unique. There's one I like where you're on these flaming barges. That's kind of cool that you've set fire to. There's a couple where there's fires going on. You're running through these places. But, when you look at this game, let's face facts. The dash system was made for these beat-em-ups, okay? There's no doubt about it because every game on it, it's a beat-em-up style game, even the wrestling games. I think of all the beat-em-ups that are on here, this is the weakest one, if I'm honest. Well, yeah. That's not true. I think the wrestling ones are the weakest ones, but this one's right behind.
Well, I don't consider those beat 'em up. I understand what you're saying.
This game is like the hybrid of if Dungeons and Dragons and Cadillacs and Dinosaurs had an unfunny child, it would be this. I don't hate it. Me and the Luke have played it and had a good time. I mean, it's okay, but I mean, again, it's just and possibly because the subject matter doesn't do it for me that much. But I mean, this is not my favorite. I will say there are some elements of this that I do enjoy. There's a lot of over-the-top violence in this. You're cutting people's heads off. You're cutting people literally in two. You can actually cut people in half with your hands somehow. That occasionally will happen. That was kind of funny. One thing I didn't know about ancient China, the Brent, maybe you could, because you've not got a background in history to a certain degree. I didn't realize the prevalence of pro wrestling moves in ancient China. There's tons. There's power bombs, pile drivers. There's all kinds of pro wrestling in this, which is bizarre. This follows the pattern of a lot of these style games. You can walk up and get next to a guy and kind of grab him, and then you can either throw him or you can jump and then do a bigger throw. And different characters do different throws. There's one guy who's basically like a pro wrestler. He's barehanded. That's all he does, just run out and throw guys. I haven't played him that much because he didn't have a weapon to start off with, but he was still kind of neat. But there's a lot of throws in this. There's a lot of clever touches in this that these games always have in terms of to keep the fighting spicy. Your guy can do different little tricks. It's got the same gimmick where you hit both buttons and he'll do like a special attack that drains your energy. Yeah. I mean, they did not reinvent the wheel here, did they?
No, and they didn't need to. The appeal of this game is, I liked Final Fight. Well, this is like Final Fight, and you get some weapons, and you get some mounts. So it was a natural progression from that. Whereas, what makes a good beat 'em up, right? You have to have variety. You have to have good enemies. You have to have good characters. This has not enough variety. It has very vanilla enemies. And at least the heroes are somewhat interesting. And they're diverse enough that you can start a game over, choose a different character, and at least feel like you're playing a slightly different game. However, where it bogs down, like we said before, the enemies are just too same-ish, and you have to fight too many of them.
There's some interesting cutscenes in this. There's one where your guys are like, oh, crap, they're killing the civilians, and it shows this mob of people running, and they've got bad guys are behind them just with spears, just stabbing them and killing them left and right. I thought that was pretty gruesome. One of the things you do in this is you're always trying to make your way to fight the final bad guy. I don't know. Spoiler alert, by the way. If you haven't played this to completion, I'm going to spoil it. So the whole game, you're trying to get to this bad guy, and he keeps throwing these other guys in front of you, and these guys are willing to die for this guy. Like, so they have devotion to him. You kind of start to feel bad. On the last level, I mean, there's one point where he sends out these three, like, gymnastic chicks to fight. You have to kill all them. Then you're fighting all these women, men. It doesn't matter. They all die under your sword. At the end, he brings out this strapping young blonde kid, this big strapping guy with some chicks to fight you, and you finally kill him. So then the only guy that's left is the guy you've been after, right? Now, I think this game must have multiple endings because I got a bad ending when I killed him. But the funny thing is this guy throws bombs at you. And that's something you see some guys in the game throw bombs. And they look like the old Roadrunner cartoon bombs.
Yeah,
they're
big brown and black one, yeah.
So at the end, when you're fighting the boss, after a while, he's like, I'm not going out like this. And so he just runs and jumps off of a waterfall. And then when I read the flavor text at the end, where the king or whatever was like, good job, you took care of that guy. And then when you read the flavor text, it says like, the guy didn't die. He regathered all of his troops up and he killed everybody. And it shows all your guys mauled. And then that's the end of the game. I'm like, man, what do you have to do to get the good ending? And I'm still not sure because I didn't read a whole lot of people talking about the ending of the game. It's very bizarre. And it ended on a real downer. I know Luke was not happy when we got to the end of the game. And that happens. And the thing is, you felt kind of bad because this guy was pretty noble at the end of the game, jumping off the waterfall as opposed to dying, which is a good move because you knew we were going to kill him. Overall, I would call this mindless fun to play through one or two times and then probably never fool with it again, the Brent. What do you think?
I think that's a fair assessment. of course, when you have these things at home, they always lose a little bit because you always know you can put in another quarter.
Yeah.
You don't have that stress of man, I've got $2 left. I'm on the last level. I really want to get through this. You know, that's lost. And of course, playing this alone is never as much fun as it's going to be when you're playing with another person. Just even if you're just getting in each other's way and beating up the bad guys, pinballing them back and forth if you get them set up just right. You have all that fun stuff going on that when you play it alone, you don't have. Does the game look good? Yeah. Does the game sound good? Sounds fine. Does it play good? Sure. It plays like a beat-em-up. It just, for me, there are better beat-em-ups out there. Even better beat-em-ups in this universe that, like you said, sure, I think it's worth picking up, playing maybe once or twice, but it's never one I'm going to come back to.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. I looked this up on eBay, and I did not see any of these currently up. Everything goes for $1 million now, so I wouldn't expect to get this thing cheap if you can find it. But again, I wouldn't fool with the CPS dashboards even now, because they're still, even when those batteries die, even if it's been fixed, unless you get one that's been pre-modded, it's probably not worth fooling with, to be completely honest with you. I got no reviews on the game this week, the Brent. So no one, which I can understand, that this is not one of the more popular Capcom CPS titles. Although, again, in Japan, this was a huge seller. In America, not so much. So there you go. That was Warriors of Fate. And it's fated to not know what's going on the entire time you're playing the game. So with all that said, the Brent, you went a whole different direction, except the exact same direction.
Yeah, I was going to say, no, I didn't.
Listen, I'm trying to build it up here. What did you pick this week?
Well, we went from highbrow, deep storyline. That we pivoted completely. Now we're going to punish with the Punisher.
Yes.
Now, Aaron, before we get into the game proper, this is something I think you could do far better justice to than I can. Can you give us a little Punisher comic book background?
Punisher wasn't one of my favorites, but in a nutshell, it was a guy called Frank Castle. Now, of course, you know, things have been retconned out the nines, okay? But Frank Castle's family was, like, killed by the mob, I believe how it went, and so he ended up becoming a very, very dark vigilante style character. And he would go out and he loved going after the mob, for example, and crushing the mob. But eventually he ended up being so popular that he ended up sort of like a daredevil character, a guy who did a lot of street level crime, but also would go play with the big boys occasionally. And amazingly, they put him in the New Avengers, which, boy, what?
That makes no sense.
And all the other characters, like, why would we put this guy in here? He's a piece of garbage. And Frank was like, no, I'm going to be great. It's like, no, you're not. A lot of crazy stuff happened in the Punisher. He died. He came back to life. He was an angel. There was a chick Punisher. You know, a bunch of crazy stuff. But in his heyday, this was a good book. And occasionally some of the reboots have started out, at least pretty interestingly. Now, the other character in this, Nick Fury, he's a much more interesting character to talk about because he's been retconned about 30 times. Yeah. Nick Fury was one of the Howling Commandos back in the old WW2 books. He was around forever. He was the leader of S.H.I.E.L.D. For the longest time, but he was also white. He's always been white. He looked just like Reed Richards with an eye patch. That's what he looked exactly the same from the, if you follow the Fantastic Four. Nick Fury was a no-nonsense, like cigar-smoking, like hard-to-deal-with ex-military jerk. You know, he ran S.H.I.E.L.D. with an iron fist. And so, somewhere along the ways, he became Samuel L. Jackson. And now, much like the Kingpin, he switched ethnicity and totally changed in every way. Now he's sort of the smooth-operating tough guy. But the original Nick Fury wasn't like that. And the fact that Nick is in this game is sort of an anomaly because he's not the guy that I would have picked to back up the Punisher, but he does fit quite nicely. So it was a pretty good choice. But he's an interesting cat on his own.
And when you have a Punisher game, Aaron, what do you think the Punisher, who do you think the Punisher is going to go after?
The mob.
The mob, but who specifically
in the
mob?
The Kingpin.
That's right. And that is what you are tasked with in the arcade version of Punisher. You are bringing down the mob, the crime lord, the kingpin himself eventually, and you want to destroy his entire operation. This was a Capcom release back in 1993. Funny story, Aaron. This game was incredibly popular in the arcades.
Really?
And I mean top of the charts type of popular. Yeah, this was and stayed in the charts for a very long time. I guess that the fighting genre had its games just starting to come out this time. They hadn't really hit their peak, their Mortal Kombat 2s, so to say. And beat-em-ups could still bring in a few quarters. And this game, Aaron, brought in some quarters. Yeah, it was incredibly popular, top list when it came out for quite a while.
I never knew that, but I know all my friends liked it, and so did I. It was because it was very different sort of beat-em-up, that's for sure.
This is highly regarded as the best beat-em-up of all time. Yes.
I don't agree with that.
No. I don't either, but a lot of people do feel that way.
But it's up there, that's for sure.
And what makes this game so good? Because it keeps things interesting. Through all the levels, you go from hand-to-hand combat to gun combat, doing special moves, throwing grenades, picking up tons of different weapon types between swords or knives and bats and grenades and grenade launchers, and the locales continuously change. You start out in like a casino, and that's when you make it people aware that you're going after the kingpin, and then you're on the streets, and then you're in a bus, and you go underground, and the scenarios just keep changing, and it's fast paced. You're never fighting enemies for very long in the same locale. And you fight a pretty decent array of enemies, which keeps the action really moving and smooth. On top of everything else, the game is remarkably fair, at least I feel. Usually, you can go through this... Now, not on your first time. Not on your first time. But people can go through this on one quarter on a regular basis.
I've really?
Seen plenty of people
not this
do
people.
It. Yes. It all depends on how you play. If you are playing to complete the game using one quarter, you can do it. There are strategies to do it. And I don't mean just pick and move type things. It's just a fair game. If you get hit, it's because you were standing in the wrong place and you didn't realize the enemy's patterns. So I really respect it for that. Also, it's very generous on health pickups. There are usually enough hidden in the game that you won't stay full health, but you'll have health to work with. Of course, hit your buttons together will do a grenade attack, which is pretty awesome, and it's for more than just the boss is going to kill me, I'm going to spam this attack a million times. It's useful to clear out hordes of enemies, which in most of these games, it's just when you're going to get hit, use it. But this, if you use it strategically, you can really advance farther in the game. You can play this two-player simultaneous. One is Punisher, one is Nick Fury. I always play as Punisher just because he's usually on the first player stick. But it's easy to play Nick Fury if you want to just hit the second player stick. I appreciate that. They play the exact same, though. They have absolutely no differences between them. I would have liked to have seen at least a little something-something, but it not the way it is. Aaron, you have played through this game before, correct?
Oh, gosh. Many times. Many, many times.
Is this one that you've put Luke through or no?
Oh, yeah. Me and Luke have both played it. We played this one. This one is... I like this game. Now, I mean, you mentioned that it was considered one of the greatest beat-em-ups of all times. Well, I'll discuss yes. that later, but it is darn good at what it does. One of the things it does differently than the game we just talked about is that, like you mentioned, it changes up stuff a lot.
Yeah.
And also the fact that Frank Castle and Nick Fury can do hand-to-hand and weapons, for, you know, that you can get guns it makes a big difference, and it gives you some strategy. Of course, this game's much like the other one. You've got the hitting the two buttons does like a, I think the Punisher does like a sweep on the ground, and and then also they'll throw a grenade if you're in the air. When you pick up grenades, that helps. Like you said, it's a fairer game. There's no doubt about that. If you're a Punisher fan, I will say they wrote this whoever put this together had read some Punishers, because Punisher are like just at the very beginning of the game, you mentioned he fights a guy on the bus, this big guy. He takes this big guy, beats the crap out of him, he picks him up, he goes, "Yeah, where's the boss?" And the guy's like, "Don't kill me, I'll tell you." And he tells him, and Frank's like, "Goodbye," and it pops a cap in his face.
Yeah.
You know? So not good.
Yeah, it definitely keeps the spirit of the character.
It's bloody. It's
not gruesome.
I mean, it's not like Mortal Kombat bloody, but it's just like there's lots of death dealt in the game. I will say one of the things that struck me as odd, and you again, this is something you see right away. In the streets of Manhattan, you've got guys with guns, but for some reason, there are guys walking around with huge broadswords, samurai swords. There's all kinds of crazy weapons. You're picking stuff out of barrels. It's like, why is this broadsword in this barrel? I was like, I don't know why. It struck me as funny that you're playing a game with Frank Castle and some guy's carrying around a battle axe. That's another thing. Like, that struck me as strange.
Tons of weapons, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I dug it, you know, and the one thing I think that got over with this was, here you've got the Marvel license, and the Punisher, even back then, was not what I would call, he's not Spider-Man, you know what I mean?
Sure.
He's not Captain America. He's a lesser guy in the Marvel way of looking at stuff. And so, but doing a game dedicated to him was interesting, but you also get that vigilante flair to this that you don't get with a lot of other games where you're out there to cause carnage and destruction. You're not doing it because you were wronged or whatever. You just want to go crush a sucker. You're killing suckers. You're being cruel. You're setting people on fire, you know, and chopping them up. And that's sort of the fun of it, to do this stuff. I mean, a lot of it is, it's your typical, you know, beat 'em up. You go in the sewers, you go in the guys' houses, you go in down the streets, you're going, it's not like they reinvent the wheel on this one either. This one.
No, I disagree. I think they had a lot of new concepts. You use what the weapons have X amount of uses. So you can't just carry a bat from one scene to the next, you know, all the way through. I think it's unique that when the enemies have guns, that's when you pull out your gun. And otherwise, you fight a fair hand-to-hand combat or weapon-based combat for the most part throughout the entire game. You can't just pull out the gun whenever you want. I think things like that make it unique enough to say that, yeah, I think it did do some things for the first time that nothing else did.
Well, I will say, you have to put this in, I guess we put it in the frame of reference of when it was released, you're right. This game reminds me, and I'm sure this is what happened. I think this game came along, and then I think this game was certainly in the mind of Capcom when they did the Alien versus Predators game, which I think this has a lot in common with that. And I think, by the way, that's another really good one. That's a CPS2 game. That they took a lot of concepts from this and put it in that, and made it a lot of fun. You got to think, this came out after Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, and Cadillacs and Dinosaurs did all this stuff. And by the way, I think it's a better game. No way. I do. I think it's a better game because there's a lot more unique air. You know, with the dinosaurs, it gets you, and the plot's a lot more unique than this. But as a comic book fan, you weren't getting these sorts of games released every day. I mean, me and you are both big fans of that Spider-Man beat 'em up that got released by Sega, right? Where you zoom in and out of combat, you can play as Namor or Spider-Man. That's a fun game, but I mean, this is leagues better than that one, you know, because this has the art and the gameplay, where that one, the gameplay wasn't that great. But I mean, I can't complain about this. I thought all the acting was good in it. I mean, you know, the sounds, the voice acts, you know, when you hear them talk, is that there's some speech. Again, much like the Warriors of Fate, I think there's a limited amount of villains. You fight the same guys a lot, and much like Warriors of Fate, you get to a point where they just march out a bunch of villains.
No,
you know
I do not agree.
Okay,
I think that I think that there are, do you fight the same enemies over and over? Well, duh, it's a beat 'em up. That's always going to be the case. But I think that it keeps it fresh with the enemies that they parade out, because it never keeps you in the same location long enough for you to get bored. It's always ready to move you on to the next thing. You might beat up 24 guys, move on. 24 guys and a boss, move on. It's always keeping you moving, and I think that makes a tremendous difference. Unlike Warriors of Fate, where it keeps you in the same locale just over and over and over and over, and if you lose your power-up, you're screwed. This game, you never feel screwed. You feel powerful from beginning to end, whether you have a weapon, whether you have your gun, whether you are have an item. It's always a good time. That's, I think, the huge difference, and I think that's what makes this game so much more appealing than something like Warriors of Fate to a casual crowd, is the game keeps going. From beginning to the end, it always giving you something new to play with, something new to pick up. I think it makes a tremendous difference.
I wish they would put in more Marvel established bad guys. I mean, really, I think Crossbones.
They probably didn't have the rights.
Well, I think Crossbones is in here, and if Kingpin. Well, they've got a couple. Why couldn't you have
some
more?
Yeah, they have a few.
I would have liked to see some stuff like that. And I mean, like I said, I like this game. I played this game a lot. I like the tone of it, but I don't think it's like huge leagues different than a lot of the other ones. And also,
I so disagree.
I think part of the reason you like it so much, and part of the reason we probably both like it more than Warriors of Fate, is the fact that, like, we know what the plot of this one is, and that goes a long way because you know what's happening. When Warriors of Fate, I didn't have much of a clue as to what was going on. But
I don't know, man.
I do think this is better than Warriors.
I don't know, man. I love it when I'm going down the street and I'm punching people, and then I see that first bad guy pull his gun, which I know what that means. I'm getting my sidearm out, and then it becomes a whole different atmosphere. I mean, you're shooting guys just as fast as you can hit the button, as fast as you can get your cursor over them, and you're just feeling awesome. It makes you feel powerful, and it's fun to do. And the bad guys all have guns too, so you have to get the ones that are getting ready to shoot you. That makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Also, the weapons are so much more fun in this game.
Well, I mean, I'll admit they've got a better and more diverse set of weapons and more of the missile weapons, obviously. So that does go a long way. Listen, I like it better than Warriors. They're mechanically they're very similar. I mean, that's all I'm saying there.
One of the best, if not the best, you can argue some of the D&D ones are better. They're definitely deeper and have more gameplay elements, which does make them a better game. However, for your borderline, baseline, beat-em-up, this is my go-to game. I've played through it several times, and I enjoy it every time.
So, you know, just to expand this a little bit, you're telling me this is better than Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, this is better than X-Men, this is better than those sorts of games from other companies. This is your preferred game, Turtles in Time.
Single player, Avengers. Yes. Now, you can't beat getting six people or eight people around an X-Men cabinet. That's a whole different atmosphere.
And you like this better than the Dungeons & Dragons games as well.
Playing alone, I do. I really do. The issue with the Dungeons & Dragons games is once you run out of your items, you know, which is the key element that makes it different from all the other beat 'em ups. Once you run out of items, or you get to a position where you're behind in levels for whatever reason, the game slows down tremendously and becomes more of a struggle just to proceed. Where this, you never feel that way. There's no leveling system. There's no getting stuck somewhere. It is all about kicking butt, beginning to end, fast-paced, high action.
You know, we did get a review in on this, the Brent.
All right, let's hear it.
Believe it or not. They didn't look at mine, but they looked at yours. It says Pajaco.
Well, your game was crap.
Oh, thank God. It's not crap. Pajaco writes, a great coin-munching, button-bashing game with nods to other Capcom games. Spot the Knight Armor and Lance from Ghosts and Goblins. Did you, Brent? A good array of weapons to dispatch enemies and plenty of level variety. Gameplay gets a bit samey, par for the course, though. The real appeal is knowing you have a limited supply of coins in your pocket, then sweating as the action heats up and the credits run low. Playing on free play takes the edge off, and you can't can spot the crunch points designed to kill you off and take your money. However, this is fun and worth your time to play if you haven't already. 8 out of 10.
So absolutely. I agree with that 100%.
He was down with it. So I'm guessing as we close this topic out, Brent, is this your favorite Dash game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that goes without even saying. It's your favorite, too.
No, it's not. My favorite of the Dash games is Cadillacs and Dinosaurs.
But it's no punisher.
I think Cadillacs and Dinosaurs a little more polished and a little more interesting.
Oh, you're insane.
And also, the end boss and stuff is way better, and the plot's better. In fact, the funny thing is I don't give a crap about the comic, but I like it more. You know what else I don't give a crap about? You, but I like this more. It's the freaking wheel. Let's get it going, man. So, I'm going to tell you what we've got on the wheel this week. We've got, and everyone in chat, keep frosty. We've got two spots for you guys. We've got the chat subject choice. We've got the Sinclair QL. We've got COM 35, COM X35, new 16-bit games, games that became other games, C64 flight sims, chat choice, fight, the retro rewind piece this week, Brent, is the Apple II, and the new piece on the wheel, VCR games that aren't Action Max. And by the way, Action Max is a console, by the way, so I don't like that remark. Do you have a thought on this week? Which one would you like to play?
I'm still shooting for some chat interaction.
All right, here we go. So chat, pay attention. If something comes up for you guys, you have to chime in. Here we go. The C64 Flight Sims brand. Holy smokes, that's going to be crazy. This was a request from Olaf Hope, who was here earlier. I'm not sure he's still around, but Olaf, you get your request, my friend. C64 Flight Sims. Well, Brent, I don't think either one of us have any experience in that department, do we?
That is backing us into a corner, isn't it?
C64 Flight Sims. Well, I know Gunship was on there. I'm sure Super Huey would be on there. So we're just going to be a crapshoot this week. Anything you want, any business you want to take care of before we close this thing out, Brent?
No, I'm business light today, Aaron.
Very good.
I guess for our regular fans or anyone that wants to join us at our regular time, we normally record live every Sunday morning, 10 a.m. EDT. Hope to see you there.
There you go. Very good. And I want to thank everyone that showed up this week at the International Computer Club meeting. We had a good time, and it's up on the YouTube channel if you're interested in having a look. Brent, let's take this thing to the house. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we will catch you guys on the flip side. Until next week, Dash on.
Hi, everybody.
Thanks for joining us today. We really hope you enjoyed the show. We want to say a special thank you to Duncan Styles for our vector style graphic and Bart Pitt for our amazing music. We also want to say a super special thank you to our supporters, Rolo, Olive Huff, oh, Terry Howard, Gary Heather, John Schaller, The Slow Norris, Frodo and L, Chris Foles, Mitsuyama, Jason Warnes, Rob, Black O'Hara, Andy Craig, Andy Jones, Kevin Bean, Jocko6502, Anthony Jarvis, Steve Rasmussen, Bernhard Lucas, Dave Velociraptor, Bram W. Betke, Roshi, Mr. B, David Terrence, Super Tech Boy, Orom, Sundown, Texas Foosballer, Airshot, Retroology, John Deckman, Jerry Dennington, and Z9K9. If you'd like to become a supporter for as little as a dollar a month, you can do so at patreon.com/ARGpresents. Supporters get access to our Discord channel and their name called out in the credits. Don't want to explain another credit card bill? That's okay too. You can support us by leaving us a positive review on Spotify or Apple iTunes. Have an idea for a wheel piece? Email us at argpresents@mail.com. We film live every Sunday on Twitch, Sunday, 10 a.m. Hope to see you there.